Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Monday, November 18th. I'm Ray Graff. Support for Medical Monday comes from Villa Veritas Foundation, Cuyahoga, New York, an inpatient rehabilitation and wellness center providing healing focusing on the body, mind, and spirit for those with various forms of addiction. VillaVeritas.org for inquiries. Joining us on this Medical Monday is Dr. Fez Borah, a thoracic surgeon with Nuvance Health. He is here to answer your questions about airway surgery, hernias of the stomach, and lung care. Medical Monday, usually a popular program. Always best to get in line early. Our number is 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. You can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. But again, the number is 800-348-2551. Dr. Fez Borah, your call's coming up right after the news. Hello once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. Dr. Fez Borah is a thoracic surgeon with Nuvance Health. He earned his medical degree in Pakistan and received surgical training at George Washington University Medical Center and UCLA Medical Center. He specializes in minimally invasive approaches to thoracic diseases using VATS and robotic techniques. He is here to answer your questions about airway surgery, hernias of the stomach, and lung care. If you want to be a part of today's conversation, give us a call, 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. You can also tweet your questions at WAMCVoxPop or email us at voxpop@wamc.org. But again, the number is 800-348-2551. Dr. Fez Borah, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, Ray. It's a real pleasure to be here, and welcome to all the audience as well.
It's very nice to have you here, and we'll get to call soon. But first, I want to talk to you about your CV, which I always read. I always read them. They tend to be a little long, but yours really caught my eye. You lead a translational research lab that focuses on tissue engineering and 3D printing of the trachea. This all seems like science fiction to me.
And it well might be, Ray. Until fairly recently, was a professor of thoracic surgery at Mount Sinai in New York City. We started our research lab approximately 8 or 9 years ago with a particular focus on tissue engineering. There is no good solution for the windpipe or the trachea if it has been diseased for a long segment. And we have been researching ways to reliably replace a segment of the trachea with a bioengineered graft. And our research lab is perhaps one of the only ones in the country, if not the world, that has some expertise in this area. Our research is still fairly preliminary. We've had some great successes in animals, and we're hoping that within the next year or a couple of years, we will have a suitable graft that can potentially replace the human trachea.
Now, when you say tissue engineering, you're making tissue out of whole cloth, or are you taking biological material and transforming it?
Yes, a good point. It's when we talk about tissue engineering, it does encompass a wide range of techniques from taking stem cells from the patient or from your own body and then transforming them into a cell or a tissue of interest. It could also mean that you combine stem cells with a bioengineered material such as plastics that are eventually resorbed by the body. Your body actually takes over the function of these materials that we put in, such that in about 6 months or 2 years, it is completely replaced by native tissue.
Now, how does that work? And how did you learn that you could put plastic in and it would be, you said, resorbed?
Resorbed and incorporated. So you have to be a little bit careful about the word plastic. This is not a regular type of plastic that you and I might be familiar with. It's a form of plastic, in this case, called PCL or or a polycaptrolactone. It's a synthetic material. For instance, sutures that we use during surgery are made in significant part of this material. And so we have studied these materials in the human body for decades. We know how they respond in the body. It typically takes anywhere from 6 months to 2 years for this material to be completely absorbed. We hope that in the interim, these materials provide the scaffold for the body then to populate with native cells, such that the organ then is fully comprised of your own or the body's cells.
Dr. Fez Bora is our guest today, and we welcome your calls at 800-348-2551. And if you're on the line, just hang in there. I have a few more questions, and then we'll jump on the phones. 3D printing. This, to me, again, this feels like science fiction to me, even if you're making a paperweight with it. But tell me about the medical possibilities.
Yeah, so I think we live in really exciting times, both as doctors, physicians, and patients. The 3D printing technology has really taken off. As we know, we're using 3D printing in a wide variety of non-medical uses, in architecture, in planning of software, in video games, and we, in the last few years, have incorporated this technology in medicine, and there are different ways that it's used. We sometimes 3D print models of the patient's anatomy if you're going to be doing a very complex operation. So that's the most straightforward and simple way to understand
it. And how do you model that? In other words, do a laser portrait of an organ and then...
Yeah, so we take a CAT scan.
Right.
So a CT scan, we extract... CAD images. So these are just data points from a CT scan, which are then fed into a 3D printer. And then using appropriate material, we can print a very similar likelihood of that patient's anatomy. So as a surgeon, I don't have to have to conceptualize in 3D what that anatomy is going to look like. If I can sometimes hold it in my hand before, I can also use it to educate and teach patients as to what exactly I'm going to be doing, rather than being abstract in my explanations for them. But I think more importantly, we are also now 3D printing cells. So there are some unique bioprinters that can take human cells, use it as an ink within a printer, and 3D print parts of tissues or organs that are now slowly being implanted back into the patients.
When you were in medical school, when you were first starting out, did you have any inkling that this sort of thing was even possible?
So I don't mean to date myself, but when I started medical school, we were just at the cusp of emails, and I laugh and I joke with my twin 11-year-old boys about this, who can't even fathom that I started medical school without email. So no.
It's amazing.
But here we are.
All right, and we'll get to the phones in a minute. I promise. 800-348-2551. Last thing that jumped out at me was augmented virtual reality. How do you do that? How do you make surgery more precise using that?
So I can talk to you about that for a whole hour, but we are working with new generation surgical robots and surgical platforms where we superimpose a CAT scan image onto the patient's anatomy so that when we're operating, it's almost like you have X-ray vision. You can look at the anatomy from the surface, but below the surface and know exactly where you are. And I think that's going to be mainstream in surgery soon, I hope soon, and it's going to make operations faster, safer, more efficient. Also give the experience and the knowledge of an experienced surgeon to a novice surgeon. So almost an external hard drive to a young surgeon just starting out.
What if there's a software glitch?
Well, then you're back to square one, right? I mean,
you're if the patient's under the knife already.
Well, you're no worse than you are.
Okay.
This is It's like a car that has, say, night vision or a blind side assist. These are additive technologies that make us safer.
Our guest today is Dr. Fez Borra. It's Medical Monday. 800-348-2551 is our telephone number. 1-800-348-2551. All right, I've asked enough questions. We'll take a break, and then we'll get to your questions. It's Vox Pop Medical Monday. Ray Graff with you at 800-348-2551. Dr. Fez Borra is our guest today. And, Doctor, one quick email, and then we'll jump to the phones. This one's from Anonymous in Montgomery. I have a slight hiatal hernia, if recalling it correctly, 3 centimeters, and get pains at random that go into my jaw and mimic heart problems. Had a full screening by a cardiologist, including nuclear, and I checked out clear of any heart issues. Question is, can a hiatal hernia that slightly presses on the vagus nerve be causing the pain described? What's the vagus nerve, before we go on?
Yes, thank you for your question. So there are two nerves that run alongside the esophagus, on the esophagus, one in front and one at the back, and these are the two vagus nerves. The vagus nerves have a wide variety of functions and usually not related to pain. The symptoms that you describe, sort of, you know, vague chest pain, perhaps some pain that goes up into your shoulders, if this is not of cardiac or of heart origin, which I'm so glad that you did see a cardiologist and made sure that this is not from your heart, could well be related to your hiatal hernia. Now, you say it's a 3-centimeter hernia.
That's
fairly small, but certainly, as I said, could be related to your symptoms. What I would advise is that you see a good gastroenterologist or a GI physician and see if you can be optimized for heartburn, first with medication. Mm. If that doesn't work, then your GI doctor may refer you to a surgeon such as myself for consideration of options for your hernia.
Our number here is 800-348-2551. Dr. Fez Borra is our guest. And let's jump on the phones. Ann and Rhinebeck. Ann, you're up.
Hi, good afternoon. Thank you so much. And doctor, thank you so much for your amazing research. It's very, very impressive. We wish you all the best of luck.
Thank you, Anne.
My question is probably a simple one. I have a family member who had stage 4 laryngeal cancer, which has been successful, and he's ready to have his tracheostomy removed. And I was under the impression that that required some kind of a surgery. Is that correct? Because he said that his doctor told him that the trachea will heal by itself, which I understand the trachea, but I'm not sure about the skin. Could
yes.
you explain that a little bit?
Yes, Anne, thank you. So each patient is a little bit different. This is a little bit of a complicated situation. I assume he's had his whole larynx removed, so he's unable to speak. Is that correct?
No, he has not. He had stereotactic laser surgery.
I see.
And chemo and chemotherapy.
I see. So
he
he's not had surgery. Okay. If that's the case, then the answer is yes. He would need a good evaluation of the upper part of the airway to make sure that that's wide open. And then generally, we would remove the tracheostomy if we were happy that the size of the air passages were adequate for him to speak and breathe. The opening, the skin opening in his neck, does close down on its own. However, in some cases, we have to do a small minor operation to close the opening in the trachea.
Hmm.
But one would have to look at this on a case-by-case basis.
Right. So the trachea itself will heal on its own, is what you're saying, but the skin may need some suturing? Am I hearing you right?
One or both. The vast majority of the time, the healing occurs from the inside out, which starts in the trachea and then ends up at the skin. At times, if the initial opening is too big, then it may not completely close. He may end up with what's called a sinus tract, S-I-N-U-S, and that is what we sometimes have to close.
All right, Ann, thanks so much for the call. Our number here is 800-348-2551. It's Medical Monday today. Dr. Fez Borra is our guest. Let's go to Jim in Matamoros. Jim, you're on.
Our sacral artery still being used in cardiothoracic surgery. I remember 51 years ago, Michael DeBakey was pulling them out of his pockets for stomach relief during the speech he was giving.
Yeah, Jim, I think you referenced one of the pioneers in vascular surgery, Michael DeBakey, who along with Dr. Denton Cooley in Houston were one of the pioneers in cardiovascular surgery. And the answer is yes.
Dacron, you said?
Yeah, it's a synthetic material called Dacron.
They make ropes out of it. Yeah,
that's exactly right. So they're still used. Things have evolved, obviously, since 50 years ago when Dr. DeBakey first used the graft in his from his garage, actually. His wife actually sewed, you know, two or three pieces of Dacron together, which is what he sterilized in the hospital and used in a patient. But yes, these are used. And there are other options as well, such as Gore-Tex and other materials.
DeBakey's long gone, right?
He passed away, I would say, in the last decade or so. So he lived up to the grand old age of 90 plus.
I just wondered what he would think about tissue engineering and some of the stuff you talked about in the first segment of this program.
I'm sure he would be fascinated by it.
All right. And maybe he could do it in his garage with his wife, right? Let's go to Gail in Oneonta. Gail, you're on.
Yes. My primary is he won't let me go off of omeprazole for a small hiatal hernia. And I was wondering if he really... He's afraid I'll get cancer because I've had indigestion a lot, and I don't have it much anymore, but I am on one omeprazole, 20 milligrams a day. I was wondering what your thoughts are there.
So I'm sorry, your question...
osteoporosis.
Okay. She's talking about omeprazole for a hiatal hernia that she's been on. The doctor wants to keep her on that. She has osteoporosis.
Yeah.
And I want to get off from it.
Right. So I think this is an important topic. And what we typically recommend is if the omeprazole helps you, then to use the lowest possible dose. You can try and go off it for a bit and see what happens in terms of symptoms. You would need a good GI doctor to follow you with perhaps regular endoscopies. The other option is to consider surgery, but that would be a second, third, fourth option. Mm-hmm. But I think... a small low dose of omeprazole, very safe for the most part.
All right, Gail, thanks so much for the call. We appreciate it. It's Vox Pop. It's Medical Monday. Dr. Fez Borah is our guest today, and the number is 800-348-2551. Hope in Schenectady County. There is always hope in Schenectady County. Go ahead.
Hi, thank you. This is a question regarding something that I think my pronunciation is okay. Laryngomalacia.
Yes, you got it right.
Floppy airway.
Yep.
Yes, and I have a niece whose child will be almost 6 months old. It has not resolved. Our understanding is that she may grow out of it, but after 6 months, what do you think the likelihood is? And then if she needs surgery, what type of surgery is usually done? And because I'm in the car, I am going to hang up just for better reception. But that's my question.
Thanks, Hope.
Yes, I hope it's a case-by-case basis is how I'll start. I think things do get better up to about a year or even 2 years with this condition. The surgery, again, would really have to depend on the extent of laryngomalacia. And for our audience, this is basically a weak cartilage of the upper part of the trachea or the windpipe and the windpipe itself. There are different types of operations. One just involves actual suspension or support of the cartilage. The other one may involve putting in some biologic or artificial materials, again, to provide support. Again, it would have to depend on the extent and the location.
Our guest today is Dr. Fez Borah. The number is 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. Last week on this program, we had an extensive chat about robotic surgery and how that has changed things when working on kidneys and intestines. You use a lot of robotic surgery nowadays,
yes,
too,
we
yeah?
do. Yeah.
And how has that helped your the way you practice and the way you do your thing?
Yes, I'm a thoracic surgeon, and so I operate in the chest and the upper abdomen with robotics. So for us, we think that the robot, the surgical robot, and I just want to be clear again, the surgeon is actually doing the operation. The robot are just the arms that are inside the patient, and it allows us to do fairly complex operations with very small incisions. So whereas in the past, we would have to get our own hands in there to be able to feel and to manipulate structures, cut and sew. Now with the robot arms, which are about 8 millimeters in diameter, you can do most of these complex operations. The robot also allows 3D vision, so gives you depth perception, so like your own eyes are inside
the
human.
You wear glasses for this?
You don't, but there are actually two cameras at the end of the telescope that you're using. And if you remember your high school physics, if you have two cameras and it like two eyes.
Stereoscopic vision.
Exactly,
right.
Stereoscopic vision. So the robot also, the ends of the instruments, they mimic the freedom of motion of your wrist and of your fingers. So it is really like getting your own hands inside the patient, better vision, and now with some of the other technologies that we spoke about, having artificial intelligence, having virtual reality come into play, we think that over the next 5 years, it's going to be a completely different way of operating.
Now, you mentioned feel when you were starting your explanation. You can't feel when a robot is cutting. I mean, part of what you do has to be based on feel.
Yes. So a very, very important point here. So I should say it is much harder to feel with the robot because you don't have any tactile sensation.
There's no back pressure or anything else.
Of the instruments. However, I'll tell you that with experience, surgeons now get a little bit of idea of feel even with the robotic instruments. What you lose in feel, you kind of make up with vision and with magnification. So that is one area that you need to be concerned about, is you do lose a little bit of feel.
Our guest today is Dr. Fez Borra, and our number is 800-348-2551 on this Medical Monday. Jack in Schenectady. Jack.
Hi. Thank you very much for taking my call. I'm wondering if Dr. Borra is familiar with the work of Dr. Robert Langer, who was born and raised in Albany and did a tremendous amount of research in tissue engineering and using plastic substrates to grow tissues and organs. Are you familiar with him at all, Doctor?
I am not specifically familiar with his work.
Okay, he did a lot of work. I know he did work with discs with chemotherapy to put in the brain for fighting cancer.
Yes.
And he was building noses and ears and things like that.
Right. I heard about him on a radio show, interestingly enough, about a few months ago. But I am not familiar with his work as it relates to our work in thoracic surgery. I know he'd done some work in the cancer arena and had perhaps had some interactions with Memorial Sloan Kettering. But I think that was a while ago.
Jack, thanks a lot. Our number here is 800-348-2551. It's Medical Monday today. Dr. Fez Borra is our guest. And Lisa in Bennington, Vermont. Lisa, you're on.
Hi. I'm calling with a scenario that I've encountered. I was diagnosed as having a weak lower esophageal sphincter by a doctor when I lived in Massachusetts. And it was based on endoscopic investigation, as well as they placed like a little thing in my esophagus where I'd push a button whenever I felt like I was regurgitating or had heartburn. And they tried manometry with me and I just wasn't able to tolerate it. I really tried, but I'm one of those people that just can't tolerate it. So I was offered a fund application surgery and I was terrified at the thought of it. I'm only 42 years old and I was even younger then. And so I moved to Bennington, Vermont. I contemplated it and I decided I wanted to go through with it, but obviously couldn't go back to the same physician as I buy my insurance through the state. So I hooked up with a new doctor who at first said that because I couldn't tolerate the manometry, he wanted to rule out the possibility of it being other things. And I appreciated his diligence. So I went through gastric emptying. I went through another endoscopy because he said my old one was old, upper quadrant ultrasound, and another test, barium swallow. And then at the end of all of it, he said, because I couldn't tolerate the manometry, he's not going to offer me fundoplication. So I didn't understand why you put me through all of those tests, where he could have just said that in the first place, because at the beginning I told him I couldn't tolerate manometry. And now he wants to give me manometry under sedation, where under sedation they place the tube and then I wake up and until I'm, you know, fully awake, they can't have me doing the swallowing. It won't be effective. I'm afraid I'm going to go into a panic attack because of how I've reacted.
Do you have a question
in the attempt,
for the doctor?
I know, right? It's scary. Yeah. So my question is, how does this all sound to you? What would you recommend?
So I think if someone is going to be doing a fundoplication or some sort of wrap on your stomach, it is imperative to understand what the motility or the function is of the esophagus. So I think your surgeon is being diligent and correct in recommending a manometry study, which for our audience, again, are a few electrical probes that are placed along the length of the esophagus, and they measure the ability of your esophagus or the eating pipe to contract. They also look at the changes in pressure within the esophagus. So all I'll tell you is that the tests have not evolved significantly. Even in the last few years, we've got some tremendous new tests that help look at esophageal motility. And you may want to look into that to see if there's perhaps a less invasive way of doing this than what you're being recommended.
All right, Lisa, thanks a lot for the call. Our guest today is Dr. Fez Bora. The number is 800-348-2551 if you have a question. How do you get the electrodes in there?
So
it's like an endoscopy?
Right. It's placed like an endoscopy. They're attached to pieces of string that are placed for endoscopy, or you just swallow them down.
Mm.
And in most cases, fairly well tolerated, though I can imagine it can be a little bit uncomfortable. But these are really micro electrodes.
Now, you had mentioned earlier in the program 3D printing of the trachea. What about the esophagus? You know, I've lost family members to esophageal cancer.
Yeah.
And, you know, in the old days, it's a death sentence. You get that and you're a goner. He lasted quite a long time.
Yeah.
Because I think science has improved and medicine has improved. What's the outlook there?
Yeah. So I think the outlook for esophageal cancer, cancer of the esophagus like lung cancer, is very heartening. I think on the lung cancer side, really, we have made tremendous advances, not as much on the esophageal cancer side, but certainly significant advances, both in terms of our surgical techniques, so the way we do these operations, but also some of the drugs now that are used both before an operation to shrink tumors down, as well as after the operation if the cancer has spread to lymph nodes. We at Nuvance Health are able to do these operations now minimally invasively. So both the part of the operation that's done in your abdomen or the belly, as well as in your chest, because you have to remove part of the stomach and part of the esophagus and then hook up the rest of the stomach to the rest of your esophagus to make that happen. We can do these operations for the most part minimally invasively, excellent short and long-term outcomes and recovery. The key thing is obviously to catch it early,
right?
Like most diseases, particularly cancer, you want to be able to catch these things in the earlier stages before they have spread to the lymph nodes, because that does alter your course.
You sound like an optimistic fellow.
I am, and I've seen medicine get so much better even in the last 12 years that I've been in practice, 15 years that I've been in practice. But I think with all the research that we're doing as well, since I am a surgeon scientist, I have a research lab. Our goal is never to accept the status quo. We're always looking to find new ways to make our operations better and to find new drugs to make our patients live longer.
Dr. Fez Borah is our guest. The number is 800-348-2551. It's a Medical Monday, 1-800-348-2551. We'll be right back. Medical Monday. Ray Graff with you at 800-348-2551. Dr. Fez Borah is our guest. Two emails, doctor, and then back for the home stretch on the calls. This is from Ben in Waterville. Please ask the doctor for his thoughts on sleep apnea surgeries. Millions like me suffer from this, but I always hear that many surgeries could do more harm than good because of the way the throat and airways heal. Any hope for treatments, or am I misinformed?
Ben, thank you for your question. So I am not the expert when it comes to sleep apnea surgery. That's done by a specialized head and neck surgeon. I will tell you that I know several of them. I've worked with several of them. And from what I understand, for the right patient, there is benefit.
Okay.
But I'll leave it at that.
This one is from Irene in Holyoke, Massachusetts. I had umbilical hernia surgery in 2006, and mesh was used to repair the damage. I'm wondering about the long-term effects of the surgery. Upon occasion, I have pain in the area, and it feels like I can feel the repair twist and protrude, then it seems to subside. I know there has been a recall of mesh products. I don't know if these were used in my surgery. Question, do hernia repairs stay put or do they change over time?
So the vast majority of hernia operations, if fixed with mesh, do fine. In fact, do really, really well.
Yeah.
A few cases where the mesh has been recalled are few and far between. It sounds like you've had a fairly good result. You know, an occasional pain or an ache, I think, is to be expected after after surgery. But again, I would urge you to see your surgeon.
Yeah.
I would urge you to see your surgeon if you had any concerns. But it sounds like you've had a good result so far.
Yeah. You see the ads on TV about the mesh. You know, a lot of lawsuits going around, right?
That's
must be fun for people in your profession, huh?
God bless the lawyers. Now, you know, I'll say this, my wife's a lawyer, but
okay. All right, back to the calls we go before you get into any more trouble. Nyla and Troy, you're on. Hello.
Hello.
Hi, you're on.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi. Hi, Dr. Fez. I've had some bowel issues for many years since I've had my children, so it's been about 10 years. And I can't go to the bathroom. I'm sorry to call. But I've gone several times to the doctor, and they finally recommended a prescription diuretic, but that still doesn't even work. So what do I do next? Because, I mean, I'm not getting results. I don't want to keep going back to my general practitioner. Who would I go see next?
So I'm not exactly sure what the problem is here, Nyla, because you've been giving diuretics for what perhaps sounds like constipation, or is it a urinary issue?
I think it's a constipation issue.
Yeah, and so I'm not sure how to answer this for you, but it sounds like a GP would be the right person, general practitioner, yeah.
All right, because I was wondering, should I go now and find a specialist, like a gastroenterologist?
I think that would be very reasonable if you felt that the issue was not being resolved by your general practitioner.
Okay.
Yep.
All right. Thanks a lot for the call. Now we go over to Lynn. Lynn in Cornwall, you're on.
Good afternoon, doctor. Thank you for taking my call. I have a 16-year-old grandson who has developed two symptoms, and I wondered if you've ever heard of these together. One is his esophagus. Is it esophagophilic, esophagitis or something?
Eosinophilic esophagitis, is that what it is?
Yes, what they're saying, and they said it's a lot of white blood cells that have to be gotten rid of because it could build up and be very dangerous.
Yeah.
So he's on a steroid drink right now.
Okay.
That's going to go on for a few months. But he has also, all at the same time, gotten, like, we don't know if it's a brain problem or neurology or something, but ocular, you know, where your eye starts going down.
Ocular myasthenia gravis. Yes, is that what it is?
Yes. That's what two doctors have said, but the combination, he gets very nauseous every morning, and that was how it all started, but he's still nauseous with the steroids and everything.
So if I can just explain this to the audience, I think this is a very important sort of topic. So the condition here is a myasthenia gravis. This is an autoimmune disorder of the thymus gland. It generally leads to weakness of the muscles of the body, of the arms and legs, but also of your face and your eyes, and you can have difficulty swallowing. And where this relates to my profession, to thoracic surgery, is that a significant number of patients with myasthenia gravis have a tumor in their thymus gland, which sits inside the chest. So it's called a thymoma. So every patient with myasthenia gravis should have a CT scan of the chest. And if there is a tumor, then we strongly, strongly recommend that an operation be done where the thymus gland is removed. We do this at Nuvance Health with the robot machine. So again, very small incisions. However, even if you do not have a tumor, patients with myasthenia gravis, in the vast majority of them, will get benefit from thymectomy or removal of the thymus gland. So again, I would urge all patients with myasthenia gravis to speak to their neurologist and perhaps get a referral to a thoracic surgeon. I think the treatment for the eosinophilic esophagitis with steroids is appropriate. The duration depends on the extent, and your local physicians will be able to guide you better on that.
All right, Lynn, thank you very much. Dr. Fez Borah is our guest today. Boy, you say some big words. Very impressively done, sir. Our number is 800-348-2551. Let's go to Dave in Valencia. Dave, you're up.
Thanks very much for talking to me today. I've had GERD off and on over a number of years. 2 years ago, I had endoscopy done. They discovered that there was some inflammation at the pyloric valve and in the stomach itself. I had some polyps that were biopsied, not cancerous. Visually, it looked like there was plaque, but again, biopsy negated that. I continued to have the problem, so I had another endoscopy just recently. Again, visually, it looked like plaque. By biopsy, there was none, no candida, no bacteria, but inflammation. But they did discover I had a hiatal hernia.
Okay.
I'm scheduled for another endoscopy, but 4 years from now, and they said just keep an eye on it.
Yeah.
So, is that what I do?
Are you having any heartburn or reflux,
yes.
Dave? Yeah.
And in fact, what started the whole thing this last time was the fact that I was having sinus and throat problems as well because of the acid reflux.
Mm. Yes, I think. One thing I would recommend is to speak to your gastroenterologist, your GI doctor, and ask him about all the options for the management of your GERD. So is it just medication, or perhaps in your case, a surgical procedure with a fundoplication, or other anti-reflux operations, and we can talk about that a bit later on, might be beneficial for you.
All right, Dave, thank you very much. Our guest today is Dr. Fez Borah, thoracic surgeon with Nuvance Health. Our number is 800-348-2551. Jill in Adams. Jill, you're on.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. My question is, I have a friend who has really, really bad psoriatic arthritis, and this is where I'm asking the question, why I'm calling you. What I didn't realize was that we all have a joint in our chest there, which is why we can move our shoulders forward and back. And on one side, because of the psoriatic arthritis and bone spurs and stuff, that joint is almost like solidified. So I know that's not your area, but that's your area of the body. And I didn't know if you had any suggestions of who he should talk to for relief. He does see a rheumatologist and all of that.
Yeah.
And the only relief he's ever gotten was with an osteopath, and that's just, you know.
Yes, so I I think a rheumatologist is the right person, and then maybe an orthopedic surgeon if it's a joint that involves, you know, perhaps part of the shoulder, etc., would be my suggestion.
Okay, he did see an orthopedist shoulder guy, and because it's in the chest, the guy basically said, "There's nothing I can do for you." So I was wondering.
Did he refer the patient then to a chest surgeon or a thoracic surgeon?
No.
So I guess that would might be you know, one other option is to see a thoracic surgeon and get another opinion there. But it offhand. I'm not sure there's anything surgical that needs to be done from what you're telling me.
Okay.
All right. Thanks, Jill. Our number here is 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. Dr. Fez Bora is our guest. Patty is in North Adams. Hello, Patty.
Hi. How are you today?
Good. You're on.
Okay. Well, thank you for having me. A quick question. I have my son was born with an extra clavicle. It's in an area that's pretty vulnerable, like there's a nerves that are there, from what I understand, and I'm wondering if you could tell me a little bit about it and if you've heard of it before, and if you recommend, he's now 20, he was a great swimmer, very active, and he wants to start lifting weights, and I'm concerned about his, you know, just his physiological, you know, what it might affect, and what maybe you would recommend.
All right, Patty, before the doc talks, clavicle, it's collarbone?
Yes.
How do you have two? Have you ever heard of this sort of thing?
So, Patty, I've rarely been stumped, but I have honestly not heard of a child with two collarbones, and I've heard of abnormal collarbones,
yeah.
but certainly not one that has two distinct collarbones. So I would be most interested in looking at the imaging over here before I can advise you a little bit better. But could it be that he has a? Could it be that he has a extra first rib, like a cervical rib? Is that
actually that is it? Yeah.
That is it.
I'm sorry. Well,
that's a little
that
different.
Is it, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Right. So that is actually fairly common. And if we scan 100 people, we'll find them in several. So as long as it's not causing any issues, and these rarely do, I would absolutely have no concerns about it. And I would certainly not make your son at all conscious of this. Let him go on and live a happy, healthy life.
He's got
a spare.
Thank you so much. Yeah.
All right, Patty, thanks a lot for the call. The number is 800-348-2551. Cheryl in, I don't know where Cheryl's calling from. Where are you calling from, Cheryl?
Troy.
You're on.
Yep. Thank you. So in 2010, I had a Nissen fundoplication. I think my hiatal hernia involved about half of my stomach. Recently, I've been having a little more reflux, but I also have been having breathing, like shortness of breath. A doctor did a chest X-ray. They've done all the heart tests. Then they did an X-ray of the lung and said, your lungs are okay, but you have a hiatal hernia. So I guess I'm guessing that something has partially failed. Is there anything to be done about this?
Yeah, Cheryl. So it can happen after a hernia repair. And again, we're talking about hernias of the stomach that go up into the chest. There are two names for it. One is a hiatal hernia. And if the stomach starts to twist on itself, then we also call it a paraesophageal hernia, which means the stomach is next to or para to the esophagus.
That's bad news, right?
Those should be fixed because they can long-term twist and cause a medical emergency. So in your condition, Cheryl, I would go back to your surgeon. I would have him evaluate you and then determine if you have had a recurrence. Usually, if you do have a recurrence, it's small, it's minor, not much needs to be done. If it's significant or if you're having symptoms, then we do consider a second operation, a redo operation.
And is the shortness of breath potentially caused by that?
Very unlikely to be related.
Ah.
Okay.
All right.
All right. Thank you.
Thanks, Cheryl. And now quickly over to Linda in Saugerties. Linda, you're on.
Hi, Dr. Press. My husband has had numerous operations on his back. He has a simulator in there. He's just had knee surgery. He's had an artificial heart artery in his arm. He's had a heart attack. So he has a condition called ulcerative sigmoid proctitis, and it has taken him over 25 years to finally discover what it is. He was first said he had an ischemic, like a heart attack in his colon, but he has ulcerative sigmoid proctitis. Because he's in such bad shape, he's gained a great deal of weight, and I'm afraid that his heart's going to give out. He had a stent put in his heart, and he can't lose any weight. Is there some way a bariatric surgeon can take part of his intestines, even though he's had his stimulator implant in there, and because they ended the colon, they said there's nothing they can do for him, but he's like 5'7", well over 250 pounds.
Yeah, so I'm not a bariatric surgeon, but we can certainly refer him to some at our institution at Nuvance Health, and a bariatric surgeon will evaluate him and then determine his risks and benefits. And that's how you come up with a treatment plan for somebody who may or may not benefit from bariatric surgery. And again, for our audience, this is a laparoscopic operation where most, if not part of the stomach, is stapled off to make it small. So you're basically, you are creating a situation where even if you eat a small amount of food, you feel full, so you don't eat as much.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a long-term, you know, solution. Ultimately, so I hate to say this, but there needs to be a plan from a dietary standpoint as well.
Linda,
surgery cannot fix everything.
Thank you for the call, Linda. All right, Doctor, before we went to the last break, I called you an optimistic man. In the last 15 seconds, what keeps you up at night? What concerns you?
I think our healthcare system. We are too expensive. We are we don't have enough access for everyone. We focus more on end of life, perhaps, rather than on the preventative care for our population and for our people. And I think with the emphasis now on documentation. So I, as a surgeon, spend about a third of my time just documenting and sitting in front of a computer. I wish I had that time to spend more with my patients. And that's what keeps me up at night.
You know, I wish we had more time to spend with you. Dr. Fez Bora, thank you for being here today. Support comes from DentaQuest, whose mission is to increase access, affordability, and awareness, and to improve the oral health of all. Welcome to Preventistry. More at preventistry.org. Once again, thanks to Dr. Fez Bora of Nuvance Health for being here. Thank you for listening. Thanks for some great calls and emails. Thanks to Zachary Malloy, who was operating at the controls today. Joe Makowitz answered the calls. Our producer is Jim Lavoulis. I'm Ray Graff. Have a good rest of your afternoon. Stand by now for the Media Project.